Most people, according to Dr. Chapman, and I absolutely agree, can see their own primary love language, but they can't see anything else. So there's a communication gap that is going on right with that.
Welcome to the Ecstatic Woman Podcast. Together, along with some amazing guests, we'll explore and tap into our inner wisdom and have meaningful conversations about developing our ability to self-discover, create, and be present in the world, while also uncovering new ways to think, feel, and cultivate our sense of empowerment so we can live our lives ecstatically. Now let's welcome our host, Alara Sage.
Hello, hello, and welcome to another episode of the Ecstatic Woman Podcast, where we activate and inspire women in their power, in their authenticity, and in their bliss. I'm your host, Alara Sage. And to my beloved fellow ecstatics, you know, love is one of those things that we're all looking for, right? And not all of us really fully get to experience. Today, we're here to talk about the principles of love language, because perhaps if we understand how love is communicated, maybe not only can we give love more clearly, more openly, more freely, but perhaps we can also see and receive how love is being given to us. And we have a wonderful, wonderful guest here today, Paul Zolman, who is an international best-selling author of The Role of Love. His childhood experience was really a lack of love, and that inspired him and drove him to search for and eventually create a method that transformed his life from anger to loving everybody. I love that so much, Paul. Thank you and welcome.
Thank you, Laura. It's a pleasure to be with you today. You nailed it on the head in that introduction. I loved how you expressed that we're trying to help people see love when it comes to me.
Yes, and let's dive into that. Just before we go into the principles, kind of vaguely and more obtusely connecting to how do these principles help everybody?
It's a great question, Laura. Thank you for that. What I like to call it is we're trying to raise the literacy level of love. That's kind of part of this. Thanks to that, gent types. Trying to raise that literacy level of love to a higher level. Most people, according to Dr. Chapman, and they absolutely agree, can see their own primary love language, but they can't see anything else. So there's a communication gap that is going on right with that. So this project that I did was a way to create so that you can have the knowledge of giving away all five love languages. And while you're doing that, you're learning them backwards and forwards. So now you have that peripheral vision. And you can say, oh, they're loving on me. It's not my primary love language, but I still can respond to that. And it closes that communication gap for most people so that they can respond. You're going to be a better lover by doing it in this way.
I love that so much because I feel like, I mean, for one, communication is huge in every single aspect of our life, right? But how often do we talk about the communication of our love, right? These love languages. And I love how you say and understanding that, yeah, we have our primary love language. So sometimes maybe we're only seeing how that's coming our way. But what about all those other love languages? And if our partner communicates in a different way or our family communicates in a different way, our friends, we want to be able to see that they are actively loving us, right? So that we can receive that and, of course, give it back as well.
Absolutely, Laura. And then what I've done is I just created a small tool, this very simple tool. It's a dice that I created. I created my own icons, put them on a dice, and there's just two instructions. You roll the dice every day, whatever it lands on, Laura. That's the love language you practice giving away all day that day. To my course of spending this, the abilities of love and everything, I realized that I really can't bid love to come my way. I can tell you what my love language is, but what if you don't deliver? Am I going to get to that whiny voice that says, oh, I told you what my love language is. Why aren't you sending it out? Why aren't you giving it to me? And it's just, you don't want to get to that point. So what you do have control over is sending it out, watching for the reactions of people when they light up, you've discovered what their primary or secondary love language is. And the second thing that you have ability to do is receive it. Watch it, and how do you receive it? That's your choice. Those are the things you have control over. As you're lighting people up every single day, Laura, what you're doing is you're discovering their primary love language or secondary love language, and it's all the problem. No longer do you have to have that awkward moment that says, excuse me, could we pause this relationship for just a moment while I have you take this survey so I know how to love you? You don't have to do that anymore.
I need to watch people light up, right? Which is always fun. And you get to understand them better. And I just want to really emphasize to the audience, I can really feel, Paul, how if you're practicing the different love languages, again, how that really opens up your perception to the different ways that people are indeed loving on you. And I just think that's so valuable. So, you know, just for like the audience maybe that can't remember or perhaps isn't even aware, what are the love languages?
So the love languages were developed, or the theories developed by Dr. Mary Chapman, who was a Baptist pastor. And as he's interviewing couples that came in, you can see that there a lot of couples kind of had a disconnect. That's why they were visiting their pastor. They had that disconnect, and the husband would love the wife, what he thought was sending out love to the wife, and then the wife was sending it back, and had a bit of light shifts passing in the night. They weren't connecting. And so he discovered that there are five ways, major ways, that people like to be loved. And just for a review, some people just can't spend time with each other. My wife's one of those like that. We just sit down and we watch Korean dramas. That's what she likes to do. You can't talk. You gotta read the captions, and I don't speak Korean, so there's no talking in that spending time. So it doesn't matter whether you're talking or not, it's just hanging out, being there with that person. Some people like their car washed, they like the trash taken out, they like the carpet vacuum, they like to help with the dishes or the laundry. They are people that like to be served. When you serve them, they light up. Now, most people like to be served. It might not be the primary love language, but they just like to deserve. They like people to do things for them. The next one is the worst. So just saying compliments or just saying I love you or noticing something particular that you really like about that person. This is what really put me on a different mindset, Alara. This is what really helped me a lot, and I'll talk about that in a minute. The next one is the touch. You need to do a high five, you can do a fist bump, you can do a pat on the back, obviously about the waist. You can do a hug. You can do a create a fancy handshake. Or the football players, when they do score a touchdown, they do a chest bump. Actually, in the NCAA finals that we just had earlier this year, I saw some women doing chest bumps. It looked a little weird, but it was just something that they had the physical touch there. And the last one is, of course, the gifts. Now, gifts could be intimidating. I had a son that actually was absolutely intimidated by gifts because he thought he always had them go buy something. One day he rolled gifts and he said, I'm not doing that. But he rolled it again. It was gifts again. I said, look, I'm not doing that. The next time he rolled it, was gifts again. Then he said, oh. By the fourth time he rolled it, it was still gifts. And so he said, okay, I'm doing that. But for me, I look at it as a hug could be a gift. A note could be a gift. Spending time could be a gift. Creating a dinner or serving in some way, all those could be gifts. So it really doesn't have to cost anything that way. The sixth side on the diamond is one that I created, it's called Surprise Me. So on a Surprise Me day, you're just watching for opportunity, random acts of kindness, or you could do any or all, or you're watching for each one of them. It's one of those days where you could actually exercise your ability to perceive what their love language might be by watching them line up for whatever you do. And in the course of a day, you can light up 3 to 10 people, depending on how much interaction you have with other people, will light them up. For kids, you can light your kids up. You can light your husband or your spouse up. this works for everybody. Everybody has a point that they'll line up.
Yeah, I love all of those so much. I have all of them and my partner has all of them. And we're constantly shifting and always communicating through all of them. And the gift one, as you were talking about that, I also really could see, you know, writing somebody a handwritten note or letter, right? If they're far away from you, of course, you can write them a letter and mail it. And if there's somebody close to you, my partner always writes me these little notes. And like, I have all these journals, like for my work, for my business, and he'll just find a little space and he'll just write a little note. And it's the best thing ever because most of the time I don't even find it right away. So I may find it like 2 days later or who knows when, but it always just hits me at the right moment. And, you know, it's just great. And it's, there's no strings attached. And, you know, it's just such a delightful experience to explore all of these different modalities of communication. So I would love to hear, because for me, I really consider anger to be a very powerful emotion. I've had a lot of anger within myself that I've had to transmute and shift. And it's one of those emotions that I have a great deal of compassion for. And I really hold a lot of space for it. I would love to hear how this really helped you. How did it help you transform that anger?
Great question. And thank you for that. Let me just go back just a little bit. The childhood that I came up in, I grew up in, was a childhood where people would talk over one another. So when you're talking over someone, you're not hearing what they're saying because you're talking and trying to get your point across. And the thought process behind that, unfortunately, is that what I have to say is a whole lot more than what you have to say. Therefore, I'm going to speak louder. And in that end, nobody is heard. And that's kind of an angry culture. One of the aspects of the angry culture that I grew up in, the other aspect was that people will interrupt all the time. They'll just interrupt you and then you'll have to stop or listen to what I have to say, but do that on a regular basis. There was really no boundaries in that way. No boundaries is another thing. Another thing was that they were just, it's just me. They're just unkind in what they say. And so there's the verbal abuse. There was a physical abuse. There was social, emotional abuse. Now, it was just, I think it was really, what it came down to was a lack of emotional intelligence is what really mounted to it. And I found that my father graduated from eighth grade and then became a truck driver. And so he was gone during the week. And what would happen, and I love my father for this, Laura, is that he would take my mother out every Friday night, every single Friday. I don't know how he did it. And I don't know that he ever missed. And I don't remember him ever missing. I keep up with that pace myself. And I'm just really, I admire that. But he wasn't very creative about it. It was always the magic bar. And it was always over alcohol. And I can imagine, I was never there, but I can imagine I'm number 10 of 11 children. So I can imagine my mother starting at the top of the list and going through all the children, and my father's been annoyed, stacking his annoyance list until, and number 10, that's about when he has that flash of anger. And I'm the target. And I'm especially a target because you can understand how he valued women by taking my mother out every single Friday night. I'm sandwiched between two girls, and all the rest are boys. So I'm really even more on target right now, because if I even look cross-eyed at my sisters, younger or older, I'd be in for it. And so I tried to be a good person and tried to obey the rules and tried to stay out of trouble most of the time. But eventually I still got the belt. I still got a lot of things, a lot of severe punishment. One time I remember being spanked so hard and so badly that it was black and blue on my rear for more than 3 weeks. It was just that kind of atmosphere that I grew up in. So I had this pent-up anger, and I also had that same habit. I think it's a generational habit of stacking these annoyances, looking at other people and feeling like I had the ability to criticize them. In fact, at one point in time, I thought I could be a great movie critic because I was so critical at the time. never worked out. You're like, I'm sit still that fall to watch 6 or 10 hours of movies all day long and then write a review about it. That didn't work out. There's just all that was kind of the background, and I was being critical of other people, watching for what's wrong with them, Laura, instead of watching for what's right. This was a paradigm shift for me. As I'm rolling the dice, now I'm looking at, well, what's my with that person? What can I love? What can I admire about that person? What is there about that person that's good? It's diametrically a different direction. Instead of looking at what's wrong, which was maybe 10, maybe 20% of their personality, now I'm focused on that 80 to 90% of that person that's really big. I missed it. Absolutely missed that all the mental, probably until 30, I was about 35 years old. I was really missing most of the good of the people whenever I met them, focused on what they were doing wrong. As the world teaches us, the news always says bad news, always focuses on what's going wrong in the society instead of anything that's right. It's just, that's kind of the, how this transformed me.
Yeah, that's so beautiful. It reminds me of, you know, our society, one of the most kind of extensive expressions of this is when people like do things against the law, right? We focus on that and we penalize them. There's tribes that when somebody does something wrong or bad, they actually bring them in and they talk and they tell the person everything that person does right and what they love about that person. And it's transformative for that person rather than like focusing on the negative. So yeah, that's really beautiful. And, you know, yeah. when we give and we're giving just simply for the act of giving, right? Which is what your dice is teaching. It's like, right. Here, give love just for the act of giving love, not because you want somebody to see you or you want validation or there's some level of subconscious manipulation. It's just simply giving. Then our hearts are open, right? And that naturally opens our heart. And the more, if somebody is really practicing this regularly, that literally means that they're going to be practicing opening that heart and they're going to experience the reality through that open heart, which allows us to see the beauty of another person.
I love that, Alara, and that's exactly right. So when you're sending it out, when you're practicing whatever genre you hold on the night, that particular night, and sending that out, you are sending it out without any expectation of it ever coming back. But there's laws of the universe that have been in place, Alara, before you and I were ever born. The law of the harvest, karma, or the law of attraction, all of them pretty much say a very similar thing, that whatever you send out is going to come back to you someday. Best use that expectation that it's coming back someday, but don't expect it right this minute. It's not going to happen. If you've made it into medicine, make it in a transaction and expecting that reciprocity, you've demeaned the whole idea of love. Now it is a transaction. Now it is business. And now it's a transaction, and it's not love. It really becomes on a lower level of just interaction. It's not sending out kindness without any expectation of whipping back. That's the point that we need to get to. And when there are no strings attached, it actually becomes that beautiful thing that you're talking about.
Yeah, I love how you say transaction. That really makes it very clear you're expecting something mm-hmm. in return. Yes. And you know, even as we speak of, because yes, karma can actually be even, you know, your next life. It doesn't mean it's going to come back in this life, but it's well worth the effort. But what you can feel and experience immediately is the feeling of giving and the feeling of loving without attachment. And that is instantaneous. And if the person lights up, hey, that's just cherry on the top. But that feeling in your heart of doing something just for the sheer joy of doing it is a felt sense of love in our heart. And that is instant. Yes.
We need that. We need that in society. We need it everywhere right now. I think society's lacking on it. And that's why I've come on a lot of these podcasts. And thank you, Alara, for having me as a guest on this podcast. We really need to get deep inside and say, who do I want to be? Who am I to that person, or who am I as a person myself, I want to be that loving person. I don't want to be that angry person that focuses on what's wrong with people. Why did that person cut in front of me? Why is that person doing that task in that way? I'm thinking that I know better than them. I can help them. It's not our call. Those were the boundaries that I didn't have growing up that I needed to draw, and I needed to make sure that keeping willing, stay right in the spot where I'm supposed to stay, and things that I do have control over, there's going to be a lot of anxiety, a lot of frustration if we try to manage the lives of other people. Can sleep a lot less when we stay with our own problems, stay with that, but send love out and help other people in a lot of ways. We can help people with their problems. We're not here to manage them.
Yes, and leaving that legacy of love, because it is transformative. Love is so transformative, and you don't always see how, but it is. And so, speaking of transformation, what transformation have you experienced with people, maybe your son or other people who have played with this dice of yours?
The biggest transformation, Lauren, that has happened, though, that I've seen, is that people begin to erase that literacy level that I talked about. They begin to see, oh, they've always been loving on me, and I'm the one that missed it. Because in my own life, I now understand that people were loving on me. I blew it off because it wasn't my primary love language at the particular time. And it can change a little bit, like you and your spouse or your partner are. That being like all the love languages, that's kind of what this dice is all about too. It provides that variety, and variety is the spice of life. I think that variety really helps people be happy. It's not like, okay, now I took the survey, now I know that Laura likes a service, and therefore she like gets tacos every single day of her life because I know she likes tacos. And because of that, every meal, every day, you're going to get tacos. You don't put people in a box like that. And how you get bored of it after a while. You need that variety. And I think that variety has been one thing. The second thing that I would say that has been more transformative for people that have used this is that their eyes have been open to be able to see it and give it back. And not in reciprocity, but give it back without any expectation of a ting bell. But knowing that, that person is a person that also is loving, that you're going to get it back at some point in time. But I hit on a great point a few minutes ago that when you make someone's day and you help them light up or make them happy, it gives you that super great satisfaction inside you that you've done something for someone. I call it a kind of a higher source. Now, we can be a higher source for any other person. Obviously, there's an ultimate higher source, and that's where love comes from, is that ultimate higher source. But it doesn't matter what religion you are. This kind of crosses all religion, all races, all sexual orientation, all anything. That person is a person. That person is deserving of love. That person is enough just as they are. That's what you're going to feel. And being that feeling away is what you really need to do. Probably.
I love how you speak about it. You know, it really transcends races and nationalities and ages and generations, right? Because you don't even need to speak to people obviously like the affirmation one, yes. But, you know, if you see somebody walking in the store and they've got their hands full and you open the door for them, there was nothing that needed to be said. And yet you just brought them a moment of love. And, you know, you didn't even need to speak their language. You didn't need to even understand their culture or where they were coming from, right? And so that's a really beautiful point, is that love does transcend all of these, you know, illusions of separation, because that's all they are, is illusions of separation. And love is what binds us and unites us. And The other thing that really came through is, I don't know, Paul, if you're familiar with what's called the clairs. We're clairvoyant, claircognizant, clairsentient, that one for some reason just slipped my mind. And it's the different ways that we receive psychic information. And we have all these different ways. And just like the love languages, everybody starts off with ones that they're really good at. So some people are very visual at first, and then others feel first. But as you practice, you actually open up to all of them. And I think this is what's so beautiful about what you're offering the world is, again, opening up to that spice of life. Because that narrowness that I only receive love this one way can definitely be a preference. I'm all about preference. We get to have our preference. But when we open up different ways of interacting with our reality and with others, we do add that spice of life that you so wonderfully put. And we do actually, you know, engage more with the aliveness that love and life is trying to offer us, right? Because that availability is much broader. So if we're only receiving through this tiny one channel that has to come this way or else it's not, you know, then really we're really stealing from ourselves, right? Where if we're open to, okay, this is my preference, but I understand love can come through these other channels. Wow. Now all of a sudden we've just opened all of these doors for ourselves, you know? And the last thing that came through was also what happens when we receive somebody. So, you know, if you can't see other love languages and somebody's loving on you, and like you said, you're just blowing it off because, not because you're trying to blow it off, but because you just don't see that as love, they're not being received in their love. And that affects us.
Oh, and that's a little jealous. We're not validated.
Even if it's not your preference, if you can see, oh my gosh, they're loving on me, and you can receive them giving you the love, wow. Like, again, just how much that opens up for them and excites them. And now, again, our exchange of love, the love in its of itself has just, you know, amplified.
It's at that point, Laura, that connection is made. That when we're receiving what they're sending, that connection is made. Oh, they understand me. They do understand me. Even though it might not be their love language, they still understand me. They understand that what I'm sending out, that it's kindness. And most people will send out kindness. Like I said, 80 to 90% of people are really, really good. And they want to be good. And they want to do the right thing. And maybe 10 to 20%, we have faults and everybody has weaknesses. Forget the faults, forget the weaknesses, because everybody has them. And focus on what is unique about that person that is really good. And as we tune in on that uniqueness, we understand that I am unique, but I don't have to be like that person. I'm myself, and I can be proud of who I am. Because of that uniqueness. And to me, that uniqueness is the diversity. To me, the word diversity is just kind of not a really good word. Because it almost is like division. It's like separating people and labeling them and doing that sort of thing. But I love the word that he brought up. The unity is a better word for that. Let's unify. Let's become a people that loves each other. People that love one another, that is sending love out all day long, every day. It's not an event like, ooh, I did the dishes, I'm done. Not an event anymore. This is a process. This is an attitude. This is a mindset. That's what we're taking a push.
Yeah, it's so interesting because I literally had an experience this morning. I went to the store and there was a man there who has on a vest. He clearly does like the carts out in the parking lot. Like that's his job. And he was inside right where the carts are. And I walked in and he handed this older woman a cart and she walked off and he kind of like nodded at me and I nodded and he went to hand me this cart and the wheels were kind of working and he kind of put in some extra effort and he handed it to me. And I looked him in the eye and I smiled and I said, thank you. Because I could feel I could feel that this was one of this man's love languages. Sure, he does the carts, but how many cart people actually go walk over, grab a cart, and personally hand it to you? That's not their job. That's not their role. And he just did this nod, and I could really feel like this was just really who he was and who was a part of him. But it was in that moment of that recognition. And honestly, it made me feel good because I saw him, you know, and I saw the effort he was putting in. And again, like we talked about, I really received it. Like, thank you for putting that extra effort in to get me a cart. Like, I walked away with this big, fat smile on my face.
Yeah. And that's all. I love how you bring up all these words that I didn't normally use. We need the people and be able to see people. And we need to be able to be seen ourselves too. But just, it's not about us anymore. When we can make it about them and make it about them all day long, that's where our reward giving will come. When we help raise someone up from their depression, we can watch every, there's pain under every household door. Every household, some sort of pain. We can, if we're sitting in a chair waiting for love to come our way, it's not likely going to come. Get out of that chair, walk down the street. There's going to be someone you find that might be a little bit lower than you are that day. You are in a position of higher, kind of a higher, that higher source to be able to raise them up, lift them up, uplift them, so to speak, then help them have a better day. By doing that, it lifts yourself up. And it's just, if we can work that way and get that mindset within our communities, I'm trying to get it within the school system as well. We haven't really talked about this, but what I'm providing is the curriculum. And it's so simple. It's the dice. At the beginning of the day, they take the 2 seconds that it takes to roll the dice. You know, these teachers don't have a lot of time because of the curriculum load that they have, and they don't have time for more curriculum or more correcting or more anything like that. So keep it simple, and that's what it does. They roll the dice at the beginning of the day. The teacher might take 30 to 40 seconds, so they all less than a minute at the beginning of the day, say, class, this is the type of behavior we're looking for today. Tested it in K through 6 right now. At the end of the day, then I've provided them with a PDF of a journal page that says what they rolled, opportunities they saw to love in that way, what they did about the penalties. It becomes a love journal. So it's just a piece of paper that now they're decompressing. I've talked with teachers a lot around the world, and every teacher has done 100% of the teachers say the last 10 to 15 minutes of the day is really non-productive time. The kids have been there all day, they're antsy, they know the bell's going to ring. They know they're not going to get in any trouble, but they're just, their minds are mush. They just can't put it one more thing in their mind. That warrants a decompression activity. The decompression activity would be journal writing. Write what you did all day long about loving. Now, it solves two things. One, it makes those 6-year-olds accountable for their actions. Oh, you mean I have to write about what I loved and how I loved that day? Heck, that better be good because I got to write a good report. And then the teacher will just check it off. Johnny did it. It goes home with Johnny. Those astute parents now will keep those in chronological order. And then at the end of first grade, what do you have? You have a first grade journal, a love journal for that six-year-old. I would have loved to have a love journal for my own first grade. Because it was a huge contrast, the loving teacher that I had was a huge contrast to what I had at home. Absolutely loved my teacher. I still remember her name, Mrs. Leathers. I don't remember second, third, fourth, or fifth grade. I remember sixth grade. But I really loved Mrs. Rogers. I would have loved to know now and had a love journal of what did I love about Mrs. Rogers. What was it about that class that I loved so much? That's something that absolutely... I would love to have been able to do that, to be able to see that. The second thing that happens is that the teacher may find a great story, and the next day when they will die, read that story to the class. Look what Mary did today. Mm-hmm. Look what Donnie did today. And just be able to improve the other class members to make it a good day. Make it a story day. Make it a day that you can remember and you want to remember it absolutely resonates a lot.
Wow. I love that so much. It also, you know, helps them to experience school in a positive light, which, you know, my boys are really experiencing school well, but I have some clients and some people I know who, you know, their children are struggling to fit into the peg of school and fit into the mold, and it's challenging for them. So this is definitely one of those things that brings in a different flavor into schools. And I feel like for the listeners, you know, even doing this practice where if you're practicing the love language, and of course, I highly recommend getting Paul's die, but even if you just practice, you know, doing that journaling at the end of the day, when you mentioned decompression, what was really coming through for me is it's processing, right? Like when we write about what we experienced, we process it on a different level. So it's not just something we did, we forget about it, we're moving on to the next action. We're really like chewing on it, right? And really taking it deeper into our mind and our body and allowing ourselves to process the emotions that we felt when we did that act of love or when we received that act of love. And how did those emotions feel? That processing is really huge for the human experience.
Absolutely. And to remember that human experience, you know, I can't remember anything that I did 2 weeks ago unless I didn't know what I did 2 weeks ago. I can't remember yesterday. So it's just one of those things. Sometimes it'll be something that you'll remember just distinctly, very distinctly. But those little things that you do, and this is all about doing the little things, those little things that you do that stack. And now instead of stacking those annoyances like I had and getting to that flash of anger, I'm stacking kindness on top of kindness on top of kindness to get to the higher laws of love. Laws like compassion, laws like charity, like forgiveness, like mercy, like intimacy, or trust. Any of those are higher laws of love, higher levels of love. But you can't imagine somebody insulting, and expecting a higher law of love at the end of the day. It's not going to happen. It's just absolutely not going to get there. But use these love languages as the basis, as the foundation, as the launching pad to get to those higher laws of love. It didn't work. It don't work for you.
Yeah, so beautiful. And, you know, as I'm contemplating all of this, one of the things that's coming through is, if people are so good at making excuses and finding ways as to why they couldn't, right? So if you come across, like, for instance, your son was a wonderful example of how he had to roll the dice over time. But have you come across circumstances where people have said, oh, yeah, I started that, but this showed up or this happened? Kind of some of those subconscious objectives. And have you had to help anybody through that?
Clara, myself. I had to help myself. Until I was age 35, I was blaming my father for the way I was acting. It was his fault. Don't talk to him. It's his fault. When you blame anyone, you don't have to change. And you know, on the spectrum, you're almost in neutral. You're not getting worse and you're not getting any better because you don't recognize who you are or where you are on the spectrum. When you have that moment that you recognize where you are on that spectrum, then you can make goals set to improve yourself. But if you're blaming someone and expecting them to change, and that's it's not going to work. It's absolutely not going to work. This also doesn't work for people that don't want to change, people that don't think there is a need to change. It's not going to work for them. You have to realize where you are and what you're responsible for when you have that responsibility. That's why I love it so much in the school system, that people are blaming one another and for things that happen in the world. If we can get out of that system of blaming one another and taking that responsibility, we're really going to have a better homes, better neighborhoods, better communities by doing that. Everybody takes their own responsibility. They almost wouldn't need insurance. I'm sure a lot of insurance agents are listening to this. I didn't say we don't need insurance, but I said it might get to the point that if we take responsibility for ourselves, insurance might be a whole lot less than what it is right now. It's mandatory. right now for most, in most situations, insurance is mandatory. This would be voluntary, but we could take that responsibility on ourselves.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of insurance at all. I personally think most of it is a scam. And I completely agree with you. If we took responsibility for ourselves, that we wouldn't, it wouldn't be mandatory. It's something that I teach my boys, is that when they start to blame each other, okay, now we're sitting down, and instead of blaming your brother, what are you responsible for in whatever happened, right? Like, what did you do? Like, just own what you did, and you own what you did. Okay, that's it. Like, the pointing the finger, it's amazing how energetically draining it is to point the finger, because you have no power over the situation if you give all of your power over to the other person. And this act that you bring in with this this die and the ability to like practice this is really giving people back their power, right? Because they get to bring that forth. And how much fun would it be, right? If, you know, there's a circumstance, whether it's with a family member, with a friend, or with a coworker, because there's a lot of that, like in corporate society, I have a lot of clients in corporate where it's like, oh, this person and that person and that person. What would happen, right? If instead of blaming, they rolled that dice and got their answer and like gifted that person love in that form, you know, how would that change that circumstance? It's such a fun contemplation to bring in.
Absolutely. We can't confess the sins of another person. We can only confess our own sins. But it's not part of the process to confess the sins of another person. You know, we could witness something, but that's still ours. We have our witness. We saw something happen, but we can't. We have to tell us what was our part. What did we do? What didn't we do about it? Then, if we can get to that point of that personal responsibility, I really think that the world's going to be just quite different than it is right now.
Yeah, it's amazing just watching my two boys when they own it. It like diffuses the whole circumstance because they listen to each other, take responsibility. One's like, well, actually, yeah, I did hit him. And the other one's like, oh, like they feel validated. He did hit me. Oh, yeah. And then I hit him back. Oh, okay. And like all of it. Okay. And then it's like they're done and they go off and they play together. And like it diffuses the whole thing instead of this like back and forth. And so, yes, I really believe that what you're bringing forth, Paul, is such a beautiful opportunity for people to transform these situations in their life and absolutely bring more love. So, Paul, how can people find you and get a hold of this wonderful tool that you're offering?
Thank you, Laura, for that. They can find it at rollabove.com, R-O-L-E, above dot. And I just kind of play on words, you R-O-L-L, the dice, outside of you. The change that happens when you do medicine and practice what you rolled is inside of you. That's rollabove.com.
Yeah, so wonderful. So, yes. Did you have something else to say?
Yeah, so I was going to say that for those that are listening to this podcast, if they are more audible, auditory like that, and they like to listen to books, I also have an audible version of the book on Amazon. Where you have to, you don't want to type in Roll of Love on Amazon because you're going to get Love This, Love That, Love a Million Things. And Amazon has typed in my name, it'll come right up. And you can find the audible version or the Kindle version as well of the book.
Oh, that's really wonderful. And I really recommend people reach out and get a hold of this wonderful tool. And I would love to hear from the audience if you guys get this and you start to implement that. Please send me that information. I can always pass it on to Paul or vice versa. Send it to Paul and maybe Paul can pass it on to me, because it's always fun to hear how these little tools change lives. Paul, thank you so much for bringing your story, your wisdom, and your tool to this space with us.
Thank you, Laura. It's been a delight to be with you today.
And thank you to the listeners. As always, you make this podcast what it is. We're so deeply grateful for you. We're so deeply grateful for your time and your presence here with us. And, you know, the courage it takes to show up for yourself, the courage it takes to improve, expand, activate yourself. I love you so very much. I'm so deeply appreciative for you. Until next time, take care.
Thank you for being a part of the Ecstatic Woman podcast. As you experience each new day, we want you to feel that you are capable of tapping into your inner wisdom and living your life ecstatically. If you want to be invited back to the next episode, just subscribe to our podcast. And if you need more information in the meantime, go to alarasage.com.